can you prove that monkeys that actually became like or apes?
That's really easy.
Right, actually became human.
Yeah, that's really easy.
Well, apes didn't become humans. Apes, humans are apes currently, but we did have a common ancestor. Eric, what do you think?
Yeah, it's very easy to do. If humans evolved, what would the evidence look like? That was a question for you, Al.
For me? All right. So we would see overwhelming evidence like the skeletons of those supposed ancestors.
Well, we got thousands of those.
No, you don't.
We do, actually. There are more than 1,000 specimens of Australopithecines alone.
No, that's not true. The
it's all, literally
all the evidence
true
that you have. All the evidence.
Go ahead.
That you
I'm gonna get a book.
All the evidence that you have can fit into. All the evidence that you have can fit into a small pickup truck.
The thing is,
completely untrue.
I do not know if you agree with me, but I do not think he's qualified to know what type of evidence you should expect.
Right.
So.
Okay.
Al, if humans did evolve, then it means we evolved from a more basal, primitive-looking ape-like ancestor of the past. So we literally only need one of those to have the evidence that it happened. But we don't have one; we have thousands.
So let's take for example Lucy. Do you have anything on Lucy, really?
I know a lot about it. But again, we have over 1,000 Australopithecine specimens.
Over 1,000.
That's what I've heard. It's at least many hundred.
No, it's not even 100. They all fit into a small pickup truck, like I'm telling you.
I don't know where you're hearing that from. Maybe of the roughly 1,000 specimens, maybe a lot of them are only known from a few bones, and so they could fit hypothetically into like a pickup truck or a dump truck or something like that. But that doesn't matter. You literally only need one to have evidence, and we have more than one.
So they're not 1,000. Can we agree on that? That they're not?
No,
they're
we
not,
don't.
They're not thousands. They're not thousands. You don't have that. You're making that up.
I'm not making that up. That is something I've heard from other people. Primatologists that study this.
So I'm not allowed to hear from other people, but you're allowed to hear from other people.
I never said anything like that.
But ever. You laughed at my examples when I said I heard from other people. You still dismissed that as crazy, right?
I don't know if you're referring to something from a long time ago when we were talking about God or whatever, but. How many proto-human ancestor specimens would it take to convince you that humans evolved?
So, first of all,
these are words, not numbers.
Yes, correlation wouldn't...
Still, you're not saying any number so far.
So let me...
The actual crazy thing is you still haven't said a single number.
Let me
he's asking for a number, Al. He's saying, how many of these fossils from the Australopithecus line do we need before we say that we have a credible number of fossils?
So let me finish my statement, then.
Yeah, correlation doesn't equal causation. Great pivot. Yeah. That has nothing to do with anything. What is the number?
So correlation doesn't equate causation. And well, again...
Just so we're clear, your argument was the truckload isn't enough. He's asking you how much is enough.
Well, we'll be seeing them everywhere, like millions. They would be ubiquitous, right?
Why would that be the case? Like they lived in a very small part of the world where there isn't a ton of water.
you know how fossils form, right?
No.
Yeah, I do.
Do you think they form everywhere on the planet?
Yeah, we see dinosaurs everywhere in the planet.
Dinosaur bones.
Dinosaurs existed for 180 million years.
Yes,
on the planet. The fact that there are lots of them all over the planet makes sense. Mm-hmm. when we realized that they lived and died for a period of 180 million years. That's a lot of time for fossils to accumulate.
So that's what you say. But the humans, humanoids were actually alive at a much later timeline, which means we are supposed to be able to recover. Yeah, we're supposed to be able
that's
to
not
recover
how fossilization
of their
works.
Bones.
Al,
what do you think fossilization is, Al?
Well, the
how do you think that works?
The mineral, like the bones of a creature mineralize over time, right?
Yeah, but where did the minerals come from?
From the ground,
water,
just not anywhere.
Well, from the moisture that seeps into the ground.
No, you need a lot of water. That's why most of the fossils are found in like the sedimentary layers, where there used to be seabed.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Mm-hmm. They're primarily found where water was. So we wouldn't expect to find fossils of these humans everywhere, unless in fact they had a good reason to be dying in the water all the time and then find themselves to be fossilized. That's why Eric brought up earlier the water. That's why we find so many fossils of aquatic life and not as many fossils of non-aquatic life.
So why would these humanoids not follow the water as we find in all human civilizations?
Why would they be in the water dying all the time when they live on land is the question.
But you're actually wrong there, because we see dinosaur fossils all around the continent.
Because they existed for 180 million years and the terrain would change drastically over a period of time that long. And also, pre-human, like our pre-human ancestors, no, they wouldn't need to live around the water all the time. Not all that many land animals need to supplement their diet with water, because what we eat are plants and animals, which are mostly water. So, like, the only reason we have to drink as much water as we do is because we have such horribly processed diets that removes a lot of the moisture from our food. So you actually get a huge amount of, if not most of, the water you need from your diet for quite a lot of land mammals. So no, like the humans have lived alongside water for like, you're talking about civilization, because it's economically advantageous and because you can farm food out of it and it's easy to move around. So these are terrible critiques of the hominid fossil record.
And by the way, it seems that we've only found 11,000 fossils of dinosaurs. In comparison, Australopithecus afarensis, which is one type of Australopithecus, we found like 300 to 400. So, when you compare the two ratios, it is a very substantial find.
300
now 400? Considering the amount of time they were on the planet, we would expect to find a lot more dinosaur fossils and a lot less Australopithecus fossils.
Yeah, and that 300 to 400 number is just Australopithecus afarensis. There's Africanus, there's Robustus. I don't remember the others off the top of my head, but that's just one species. So Al, like, literally, if humans evolved, then there would be evidence of proto-human ancestors. Literally only one fossil specimen is confirmatory evidence of that. Okay, now we have more than one. We have a huge number of them. So I'm confused as to why that's not enough.
So when you talk about these specimens, you're talking about even like they can just find one bone and say that, okay, this is Australopithecus, right?
Yeah, because
you know that,
bones
right?
are like paleontologists know how to diagnose something just on the bone, because animals have extremely specific anatomy to them. A huge number of the extinct animals from the past are known and named after their teeth, because teeth are some of the most specialized thing in organisms. And the I don't know if it's Greek or Latin, but don means tooth. So we have megalodon, mastodon, iguanodon, hypsilophodon, smilodon, glyptodon. Actually, that's glyptodont, so that might be different. Carcharodontosaurus, dimetrodon, dimorphodon. Like, there's so many of the extinct animals you know of have tooth in their name because paleontologists know how to classify and identify things based on even fragmentary evidence. This is a very robust and sophisticated science.
Do you have a complete fossil of this Australopithecus?
Even if we only found the left half of it, we have bilateral symmetry. So even if you only have 50% of the bones, you have 100% of the specimen, effectively.
Okay.
Let's like, just that would be that an argument to say, true. Well, maybe it's a centaur if all we found was the skull and its arms, you know? Like, nobody thinks that that's even remotely reasonable.
So let me give you the benefit of the doubt here. Let's just say it's true, right? What's
true? The likelihood that we have specimens evolution is true?
Yeah, that actually you've got the specimens and sure. That it's true, that human evolution is true.
Okay.
What is the likelihood that an amino acid could actually form on its own in a
super fucking high.
We find them in asteroids. Yeah,
I can't wait to hear this one.
We find them in asteroids.
I think you
just recently.
Yeah, so but you don't find life in asteroids. So. But anyway,
way to shift the goalpost. That wasn't the question you asked.
Yeah, that was a shift. Yes. Huge. All right, so we find amino acids self-assembling and a protein.
Okay, so what I was asking was what is the likelihood that an amino acid can actually form on its own?
We just told you 100% likely.
This is a known thing to happen because we find them in asteroids, like obviously completely divorced from biology. And I don't think that means you get to say it's 100% because it happened, you know, but amino acid formation abiotically is known.
So you didn't answer my question.
Yes, like, I did. I don't know what the number would be.
It's not 100%. I know the number. It is 100%.
Because we think sure, it's more than 0%.
it's not even close to zero.
Hey, let me ask you.
I know it's not. Like an amino
acid. It's closer like 10 to 100.
it's like why 10 to think? The minus 57, actually.
No, it's Swiss not.
Yes, Swiss.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
I guarantee that what you're doing is you're taking 20 to the power of however many proteins or amino acids that protein is. Yeah, I 100% promise that's exactly what happened. Where are you getting this information from?
You can look it up. Like
I have. I wrote a book on this. That's how they calculate it.
Yeah, which is biased, obviously, because if it was that prevalent,
towards science, it's biased towards science. Yes,
you'd be able to make it. Then why don't you make it? Then why don't you
make what?
Make a book? I literally wrote it.
We do.
No, make an amino acid. Life-giving amino acids. No, you don't.
They have.
We do.
Yeah, they do.
Let me ask you, what do you think an amino acid is?
Yes, they have.
What do you think an amino acid is?
They're not even close.
Yes, they have.
Let me answer this piece.
Can you show me evidence? Yeah.
Our cells make amino acids literally all the time.
No. I'm saying from scratch. From scratch, like...
What do you think an amino acid is? Please answer the question.
An amino acid is the building blocks of RNA that makes our DNA.
No. Jesus.
RNA. Do you think amino acids build RNA?
Yes, amino
acids, they build RNA. It is not not the actual nucleotides. So, amino acids, which literally form proteins, are what are forming RNA.
Yeah, they form the proteins that make the DNA, right?
DNA is not made of proteins.
You said RNA. Is it RNA or DNA? I'm confused. Which one do amino acids make? No, you said that RNA amino acids DNA, make right? RNA.
Yes.
So, do amino acids make RNA, or do they make DNA?
Okay, so can you first answer my question?
The problem, the problem is,
you're treating amino acids.
Just a second.
Red herring.
You're treating amino acids.
You're trying to introduce a red herring, but
again, you're treating amino acids as if they are a complex molecule when they're not. It's literally a carboxyl group and an amino group and a CNH. That's all it is.
Correct. It's literally
the simplest thing you can have.
Yes, but the likelihood of actually that forming on its by itself is very, very, very low. If it was actually
the calculations
high,
we find it in space.
Yeah, but how do you know they were not already there, though?
Hey, what do you mean already there?
Yeah, what does that mean?
Yeah, as in they were created,
probably.
So your alternative hypothesis is that God created amino acids inside of proteins at the moment of creation, and later on we just find them.
I don't see anything wrong with that.
Is it a working theory?
Well, God created the heavens and the earth, right?
I get that that's your claim. Is this a working theory?
Uh-huh. It's not a theory, it's a fact. From someone that's, who has actually been there. Certainly is
that's,
not a fact.
That's absolutely precious.
It's insane so when you prove that amino acids make RNA.
Like I said, what's the likelihood that an amino acid 100%. Can come
100%.
from what city? So if it's 100%, can you show me
what are the odds
that
God created amino acids inside of meteorites?
That's 100%.
100%. How did you do the arithmetic?
He was the only one who was there. He was the only one who was there. He made everything.
You're just telling us your claim instead of working through anything. I want to talk about human evolution some more. So, Al,
but
if we didn't have a single fossil of anything, we could still test if humans evolved. Do you know how you would do that?
Yeah, sure. Can you
well, I asked if you know, and you said yeah.
No, I said yes. Please enlighten me on that.
Okay. So what the theory of evolution proposes is that all life on the planet evolved from an original stock. You're with me so far?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, that would mean all life on the planet is related. You with me so far?
Yep.
All life on the planet shares genes. So there, we have evidence, proof positive of evolution.
So as I said, correlation does not mean a causation, right?
That's literally how science works, actually. So I don't really know what to tell you.
It just means that all living things were coded by one coder, right?
It doesn't mean because that's not a working theory.
So the reason why this isn't true is because of endogenous retroviruses. Which I think definitively demonstrate that we have common ancestry. Do you know what an ERV is? Have you heard? I assume you have. It sounds like you've studied this a little bit. Do you know what it is?
Oh, jeez.
What's that?
He hasn't.
Have you ever heard of an endogenous retrovirus?
I've heard of that, but I can't really define it at the time.
So when a virus gets into your body, some sort of foreign organism, it can actually, we'll say, damage your DNA by inserting DNA into your DNA, and it leaves marks. Like, you can tell where the inserted viral DNA is inside of the host DNA. Now, what's interesting is once this happens, if it's in your genome and you pass it down to your child, they've got it in the same sequence. So if, like, the sequence is A, B, C, D, viral DNA, E, F, G, so on and so forth. You're like, it always shows up in this sequence every time in this gigantic strand of DNA, and it shows up in everybody from this lineage. So then you can track endogenous retroviruses to see who is related to who. Because, here's a group from Poland. As it turns out, most of these people from Poland have this one specific ERV, but people from Australia don't. Now, as it turns out, we can trace it further back. We can say, listen, as it turns out, all humans share certain ERVs, which is a demonstration that all humans had at least one ancestor that gave rise to all of us that had those ERVs, or else there's no reason for us to have those ERVs. And it turns out a high percentage of those we share with the great apes. The great apes and the humans share like 200 ERVs that could only happen if we had shared common DNA prior to that. And as it turns out, of those 200, there's a ton of them that literally only show up in the ape and the human family. They don't show up in cats, they don't show up in dogs, they don't show up in plants. They're only shared between us because these are our direct common ancestry, the great apes. And Eric can explain that much better than me. He's the science guy here, but I think ERVs are fantastic evidence for common ancestry.
Now, your explanation was really good. I have the specific number of the 211 known retrovirus insertions that the human genome has. Chimpanzees share 205 of them. Now, our genome is absolutely huge. So a retrovirus could insert DNA in countless places in your genome. So these are the kind of coinkydinks that you absolutely cannot hand wave away. The probability of even sharing 12 specific insertion locations with chimpanzees, the odds of even 12 are greater than one over the number of atoms in the observable universe. But we don't share 12. We share 205.
So meaning we are affected by the same viruses?
No. It means it's not 100% of that went over your head. A very long time ago, a virus inserts some DNA into an organism's genome. That organism has children. They also inherit it, right? Now, eventually what can happen is those children have children, so you get exponential growth. And what can happen is that can eventually spread to the entire population, kind of like how everybody in the world got COVID a few years ago, right? Not literally, but huge. Like, eventually that can happen, right? So that has happened huge numbers of times over the course of millions upon millions of years, and it happens in extremely specific places. And so us and chimps share 205 out of 211 of these. The best comparison would be if before we started sailing around the world, actually a more apt comparison would be aliens. The best comparison would be if we went to another planet and we got there and all of the aliens speak English, that can't just be a coincidence. It's simply unfathomable that over there they would also speak English. The only explanation that would make any sense is, you know, somehow a population of humans went there and populated it, and that's why they all speak English too, or whatever.
Okay. So you're saying that because of this, then we're definitely related?
Yeah. Well, we don't even need that for relation because we share genes with them, so we know we're related to them. But it's a very solid, different kind of genetic test, because endogenous retroviruses aren't, some of them are genetic because like one of them has to do with forming the mammalian placenta, for example, but a lot of them are in non-protein coding regions. So there's absolutely no selection mechanism for them. So them being preserved is extremely strong evidence.
So you're saying this would take millions of years to attain, right?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, presumably a long period of time.
Yeah, some of them are more recent, but the vast majority are very ancient.
All right.
but we haven't.
And we can see them spread in real time. Like, we can see that they develop in population groups in the modern time, and we can trace them within a population group, and we can even induce them in animals. There have been experiments where people have, for lack of better words, you know, induced viral loads on animals and studied how endogenous retroviruses even form.
So if this takes a million years, the Earth isn't even a million years, though.
The Earth is billions of years old.
Like 4.6 billion years old.
But how do you test that?
Radiometric dating.
There's a couple ways. Yeah, radiometric dating is a good one. And my favorite that I recently learned about, and this would be old news for Eric, I recently learned one of the ways that they confirmed the various radiometric dating is through coral fossils. Turns out coral fossils, coral itself develops tree rings like trees, except they do daily rings, and you even have a yearly ring, and they can actually count how many days are in a year based on the rings inside of a coral. It's really interesting. So they find there's been a coral discovered from the Denovian period, so like 370, 380 million years ago. And since we know that the days were actually shorter then, there was approximately 22 hours in a day based on our science and understanding of tidal waves. So what they did is they said, hey, we've got these coral fossils that were in the Denovian period based on the stratigraphy. So we can go into the coral fossils and ask ourselves, hey, if we count these coral fossils and we calculate, so we know through math, like every year, how much less of a day we get, or how much more of a day we get because the planet is slowly turning slower. They said, okay, so 380 million years ago, based on our calculations, we should see that the days were about 22 hours long rather than 24 hours long. So they did. They actually counted the rings between the years on coral fossils and discovered that they were 22-hour-long days at that time period, which confirms the radiometric dating.
So you're assuming time is linear, right?
No, it's not about time. This is about the rotation of the Earth. We assume
the laws of physics weren't randomly different in the past, yeah. The same way you do.
So if I'm taking your study, then I know that the magnetic field of the Earth has weakened like over the last 1,000 or 1,500 years.
But that doesn't affect the length of the days.
No, it doesn't. But it affects the age of the Earth.
It doesn't.
If we go back,
it certainly does not. But we're talking about the fact that because of the tidal forces, the rotation of the Earth slows ever so much every year. We can calculate how long the days were a million years ago, 5 million years ago, 100 million years ago. We can calculate that, and we actually can check it with fossils. Fossilized coral from those time periods that we find in the geological column that are dated using radiometric dating to that time period. It just happens to be that they agree with each other.
But this radiometric dating, what are the assumptions that you use to actually come about with your results?
Do you know that the radioactive decay is stable?
Uh-huh.
Which it has always been observed to be stable. And radiometric dating is cross-disciplinarily confirmed all the time. Justin gave you an example of how, look, if the radiometric dates are accurate and this thing really is this old, then that should line up with this other piece of evidence, and it does. We do things like this all the time. They take sedimentary layers and dendrochronology and radiometric dating, and they do it from the same region, and they say, okay, well, let's count the tree rings, let's count the amount of daughter product that's been produced, and let's count up the sedimentary layers, and you get the exact same date with them. So those are coincidences that can't be hand-waved away.
So how come this radiometric dating cannot tell the age of something that we actually know the age of? Like,
because like a volcanic eruption that happened yesterday?
Yeah, at Mount Helena in 1986.
Yes, I know. Mm-hmm. Every single scientific measurement has a range of error, right?
Mm-hmm.
For things like, I don't know what specific isotopes they use for Mount St. Helens. It might be potassium-argon dating. But the potassium-argon has an extremely long half-life. I don't know what it is. I'm just going to throw out a random number, 1 million years. I'm sure that's not it. Let's just say it's 1 million years. If it's 1 million years, plus or minus 1%, that means our measuring tool is 99% accurate. That's extremely good. But what's 1% of 1 million? What's 1% of 1 million?
That should be 100...
10,000.
10,000, yeah.
So your range of error is 10,000. So if it erupted yesterday, it might say it's 10,000 years old.
But that's not even close to its... The error that it actually
that's the point. That. That's how half-lives work.
That's an inappropriate measuring tool to use. You use different ones.
So what you're saying is...
Go ahead, Joe.
Sorry. What you're saying, Al, is you're saying, listen, I took an unmarked ruler. It's just a yardstick. So the only thing you know is that it's a yard long. And you said, and I'm going to measure a flea with it. And then you measure the flea with it, and you're like, I can't get an accurate measurement. Yeah, because you're using the wrong tool. You can't measure a flea with a yardstick that's unmarked. When you have the decay of something, like uranium is something like 700 million years, if the half-life is 700 million years, and then the rate of error is 1%, then yes, 1% of 700 million is going to yield you a very large number, which is why you don't use these types of radiometric dating for things that happened recently or for things that you need to date to a precise date. These are for large spans of time.
Yeah, but the margin of error on that specific occasion was in the hundreds of millions. It wasn't even just 10,000.
I know it wasn't.
It was.
I've looked into these claims. They don't even make that claim.
What do you mean they don't make that claim? They actually do. And all of them actually...
Specify.
All of them were so wrong.
It's maybe believable because some radioactive isotopes have a half-life in the billions. So 1% of a billion is 10 million years. So that would have to be like a 10% error, which I don't believe that either. I think you're misrepresenting misremembering. Sorry, I'm not attributing malice. Misremembering whatever that was, because I don't go. I'm not going with that at all.
Okay, well, guys, I need to put my son to sleep right now, so I think I'll catch you on your next live.